Imagine a company whose products quietly shape your daily experience, yet you likely don't even know their name.
That's right.
We're talking about the subtle aroma that makes your coffee inviting, the delicious taste that defines your favorite snack, or maybe the lingering freshness of your laundry detergent.
Absolutely everywhere.
This isn't a tech giant or an automotive behemoth. It's a leader in the intricate, often invisible world of flavors and fragrances. Welcome to The Deep Dive, where we take your pile of sources and distill them into the essential knowledge you need to be truly well-informed. Today, we're embarking on a fascinating journey into Givaudan SA, a global leader in this hidden industry based on an incredibly comprehensive investment research report.
A very detailed report, yes.
Our mission today is to solve a bit of a puzzle. How does a company whose products are literally designed to be consumed or evaporate, often without consumer recognition, become one of the world's most valuable and resilient businesses?
That's a great question.
We'll explore what makes it such a high-quality entity, but also grapple with the inherent tension of its consistently premium valuation. Think of it as peeling back the layers of a complex scent or flavor, what's truly at its core.
What's truly fascinating here is that Givaudan operates in an industry that, while seemingly niche, maybe even a bit glamorous with fine fragrances.
Right, using perfumes.
Exactly. But fundamentally, it's deeply embedded in consumer staples, things you buy week in, week out.
Mm.
This makes it remarkably stable and less prone to the wild swings of other sectors. This deep dive will really illuminate the powerful combination of intrinsic business quality and a unique industry structure that allows a company like this to not just survive, but truly thrive.
So we're digging for the secrets.
We're looking for those crucial nuggets that explain this dynamic and what it means for anyone trying to understand its extraordinary market position.
Okay, let's unpack this enigma. To begin, what exactly is Givaudan and what's its role in our daily lives? Because for many, you know, their name isn't exactly a household one.
You're right. Their name might not be on every product, but their essence, their work, certainly is. Givaudan SA, founded all the way back in 1895.
Wow, that's old.
It is. A Swiss multinational company that innovates, creates, and manufactures flavors, fragrances, and increasingly active cosmetic ingredients. Essentially, they are the hidden partner to the global consumer goods industry.
Hidden partner, I like that.
It fits. This means their products are indispensable components in everything from the beverages you drink and the savory foods you eat.
Snacks, meals.
Right. To the fine perfumes you wear, the laundry detergents you use, and the creams you put on your skin. They are pervasive, touching nearly every sensory aspect of our consumer lives. The business itself is smartly organized into two roughly equal core divisions, taste and well-being and fragrance and beauty.
Okay, two main parts.
Exactly. This dual structure provides a natural hedge and a truly diversified portfolio. It allows them to balance the distinct dynamics of the food and beverage markets with those of personal and household care.
So if one area slows down,
the other can often compensate, ensuring stability even if one segment faces headwinds. It's a smart setup. Let's delve into each. The Taste and Well-Being Division, this is all about flavor and taste solutions for the global food and beverage industry.
Makes sense.
When you look at its sales breakdown for fiscal year 2024, it's quite balanced. Beverages make up about 36% of that segment's sales. Savory foods are 37%.
So nearly neck and neck.
Pretty much. Dairy is 12%, and sweet goods come in at 15%. But this isn't just about classic flavors, you know, vanilla, chocolate.
Right.
This division has been strategically expanding into functional and nutritional ingredients, which is where a lot of the really interesting innovation is happening.
Functional. What does that mean in practice?
It means they are actively addressing major consumer trends, like the soaring demand for sugar and salt reduction in foods.
Big trend.
Huge. Finding ingenious ways to mask the often challenging taste of plant-based proteins.
Also huge.
Definitely. And developing other nutritional enhancements that allow consumer brands to meet evolving health demands. Think about making healthy food taste great.
Okay, so they're solving problems for food companies.
Precisely. For FY 2024, this powerhouse division alone generated CHF 3,752 million in sales. That's Swiss francs, by the way.
Got it. CHF 3.7 billion.
Then you have the fragrance and beauty division. This is responsible for creating scents and beauty solutions.
The perfume side, but more than that.
Much more. This segment is further split into three main business units. Fine fragrances, which accounts for 21% of segment sales. Consumer products, a massive 63%.
63%, that's the bulk of it.
It is. And fragrance ingredients and active beauty at 16%. The consumer products unit is truly vast, serving the immense personal care, home care, and fabric markets we just mentioned. Think about the scent of your shampoo, your dish soap, your fabric softener.
Daily use items.
Exactly. Fine Fragrances is where Givaudan collaborates with prestigious perfume brands to craft those iconic scents. This unit in particular has seen exceptional double-digit growth post-pandemic.
Really? Why is that?
Our sources attribute it to what's known as the lipstick effect.
Ah, the idea that people buy small luxuries in tough times.
That's the one. A phenomenon where consumers, even in uncertain economic times, tend to splurge on small luxuries like perfume. This is coupled with a broader trend towards premiumization in the beauty market.
People trading up.
Right. And finally, they've made a significant strategic push into active beauty.
Okay, what's active beauty?
This involves offering scientifically backed cosmetic ingredients for skincare and hair care ingredients with proven effects.
Like anti-aging or soothing ingredients?
Exactly. It's a segment that promises high growth and high margin potential as consumers increasingly demand beauty solutions that are not just natural but actually work. In FY 2024, this division reported impressive sales of CHF 3,660 million.
So almost the same size as Taste and Wellbeing. Very balanced.
Very balanced indeed.
So they're not just making the smell in your shampoo, they're creating the very science that makes your plant-based burger palatable and your skincare more effective. This deep diversification across such fundamental, often non-discretionary consumer categories, does that provide a unique kind of resilience in a volatile market?
It's absolutely fundamental to their business model's robustness. Yes.
Okay.
This deep diversification means their revenue is primarily tied to consumer staples. Things people buy, frankly, regardless of the economic climate.
Food, soap.
Food, beverages, personal care products, they're essential, not optional extras for most people. That's why Givaudan is significantly less susceptible to economic downturns than many other industries.
Makes sense.
It's a foundational aspect of their business resilience, providing a stable, almost annuity-like revenue stream that continues even when broader economic fluctuations hit. Hashtag tag BD.
The secret sauce of revenue stickiness. Now, here's where it really gets interesting, I think, and starts to explain that puzzle we mentioned earlier. Our sources highlight something they call revenue stickiness and customer integration. For you listening, could you walk us through what that truly looks like in their day-to-day operations and how it creates such a powerful competitive advantage for Givaudan?
This is truly their secret sauce. It's a core strength and, frankly, a major competitive advantage. Here's the thing. While Givaudan's products are absolutely critical to a brand's sensory identity and overall consumer appeal, you know, the taste, the smell.
The core experience.
Exactly. They typically represent a remarkably small percentage of the end product's total cost, often just 0.5% to 2%.
That low? Really?
Yes. Think about it. A few pennies extra for the unique, custom-designed flavor of a multi-dollar beverage or the distinctive scent of a premium detergent isn't going to break the bank for the manufacturer.
Right. It's a tiny fraction of the cost.
This paradoxically low cost makes customers far less sensitive to price increases for what is, despite its small cost, a highly differentiating and, frankly, indispensable ingredient. But it's not just about cost. Their flavors and fragrances aren't generic off-the-shelf commodities. You don't just pick one from a catalog.
Oh, okay.
They are custom-made solutions, painstakingly developed through a deep collaborative co-creation process with their clients.
Co-creation.
Yes. Often, Givaudan's expert teams, their world-renowned perfumers and flavorists, are working almost as an extension of their customers' own R&D departments.
So they're embedded in the client's process.
Deeply embedded. This can involve months or even years of close collaboration to perfect a specific scent or taste profile for a new product. Or maybe to reformulate an existing one to meet new demands, like reducing sugar without sacrificing taste. And this intensive co-creation process leads directly to incredibly high switching costs.
Okay, high switching costs. Explain that.
Once a Givaudan formulation is designed into a successful product, imagine a blockbuster perfume or a leading food brand. The intellectual property for these custom formulas is actually owned by Givaudan, not the customer.
Wait, Givaudan owns the formula, not the brand using it.
That's correct. For these custom creations, Givaudan retains the IP. So if a client wanted to switch suppliers, it wouldn't just mean finding a new flavor house. It would mean fundamentally altering their end product.
Which is a huge risk.
An incredibly risky proposition. They would have to reformulate from scratch, retest it extensively with consumers, potentially change ingredient labels, redesign packaging.
And hope the customers don't notice or mind the change.
Exactly. And risk alienating their loyal fan base if the taste or scent isn't identical. That immense effort, cost, and commercial risk are precisely why Givaudan's formulas are so sticky.
Sticky, right.
This dynamic truly locks in customers for the life cycle of their products, leading to annuity-like revenue streams and exceptional business model resilience. It's very, very difficult to unwind those relationships. It creates a powerful, enduring moat around the business.
That's a huge differentiator. They're not just selling a product, they're selling an indispensable partnership where they effectively own the very essence of that product's sensory identity. It goes far beyond simply being a supplier. It's almost like they become part of the brand's DNA.
That's a very good way to put it. Part of the DNA, hashtag tag 2, the global footprint and diversification advantage.
A business with this kind of impact and stickiness must have a truly global reach, right? What does the geographic and customer breakdown look like for Givaudan? How does this extensive diversification contribute to their resilience?
You're absolutely right to emphasize global reach. It's huge. A core strength of Givaudan's business model is its extensive diversification across geographies, market maturities, and customer types.
Multiple layers of diversification.
Exactly. This isn't just about being big. It's about strategic spread, which provides significant resilience and hedges against localized downturns or shifts in demand. Geographically, they have a remarkably well-balanced global footprint. Europe, Africa, and the Middle East, or EAE, is their largest region, accounting for 40% of their total sales in FY 2024.
Okay, 40%.
Followed by Asia Pacific, contributing 25%.
Growing region.
Definitely. North America accounts for 23%, and Latin America rounds it out with 12%. This broad geographic spread is a critical risk mitigator.
So not overly reliant on any one place.
Precisely. It ensures the company isn't overly dependent on any single economic region. If one area faces a slowdown, the diverse global presence allows others to often pick up the slack, maintaining overall stability. And it's not just about where they sell, but to whom and in what kind of market. Their revenue is almost evenly split by market maturity. 53% comes from mature markets like Western Europe and North America.
Developed economies.
Right. While a substantial 47% comes from high-growth markets, primarily in emerging economies.
Nearly half from high-growth areas.
Yes. This structure is strategically brilliant, I think. It provides a stable, cash-generative base from those developed economies, which tend to be more predictable. But simultaneously, it provides significant growth exposure to the rising middle-class consumer in emerging economies.
Where the growth potential is higher.
Exactly. Where population and spending power are expanding rapidly, offering robust future growth avenues. And finally, let's look at their customer types, which is often an underappreciated aspect of their diversification, I find.
Okay.
Sales to global customers, those massive multinational consumer packaged goods, CPG giants, we all know.
The big household names.
Right. They account for 42% of their total sales. But here's the crucial point. A majority, 58%, comes from local and regional customers.
More than half from smaller players. That's surprising.
It is, but it's incredibly important. This mix is vital. While global CPG giants provide scale and stability, local and regional brands are often the primary drivers of growth and innovation, especially in emerging markets where they are much better attuned to local tastes and preferences.
They know their market better.
Exactly. Management explicitly highlighted exceptional performance with the local and regional customers in its 2024 results, underscoring just how vital this segment is as a growth engine for them. This level of customer diversification reduces any single customer concentration risk and allows Givaudan to participate in the most dynamic, fast-evolving parts of the global consumer goods market.
This level of diversification across so many dimensions, geography, market maturity, customer type, truly seems like a massive competitive advantage. They've really built a robust portfolio that hedges against regional downturns or unexpected shifts in consumer behavior. It sounds like they've mastered the art of being everywhere at once, but with a highly tailored approach.
That sums it up nicely. Yeah. Strategic diversification, hashtag tag 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 B, scale and market position.
Precisely.
Beyond just diversification, Givaudan is the undisputed world's largest company in the flavor and fragrance industry.
The number one.
By revenue, yes. This leadership position hasn't been achieved overnight. It's been solidified through decades of consistent organic growth and very strategic, often bolt-on acquisitions. We'll probably talk more about those later.
Okay.
This sheer global scale itself is a formidable competitive advantage. Consider the sheer footprint. Givaudan encompasses over 16,942 employees.
Almost 17,000 people.
Yes. Operates out of 162 locations worldwide, which includes 78 production sites and 62 creation and research centers.
That's a huge network.
It's incredibly extensive. And this network is what enables them to serve their diverse customer base with highly localized solutions. They can develop specific flavors or scents for distinct regional palates and preferences.
Tailoring it locally.
Exactly.
Yeah.
While simultaneously leveraging global efficiencies in R&D, procurement, and manufacturing. Being this large allows them to invest in the cutting-edge capabilities, advanced technologies, and extensive ingredient libraries that smaller players simply cannot match, further cementing their market leadership.
So it's not just about being big, it's about being strategically global, leveraging that immense scale for both local relevance and global efficiency. It's a powerful combination that few can replicate.
A very powerful combination, yes.
That brings us to the broader industry landscape.
Wrong.
What does the global flavors and fragrances market actually look like? Is it a cutthroat battle with thin margins, or is it something else entirely?
It's definitely something else. The global flavors and fragrances, or F&F industry, is what analysts call a structurally attractive market.
Structurally attractive. Meaning
it's characterized by steady, defensive growth tied to those consumer staples we talked about. It has extremely high barriers to entry, which protects the existing players. And it enjoys a generally rational competitive landscape.
Rational meaning not crazy price wars.
Generally, yes. Its performance is intrinsically linked to the resilient demand for essential consumer goods, which means it's far less susceptible to economic cycles than, say, a luxury goods market or heavy industrial sector. This inherent stability contributes significantly to Givaudan's premium valuation. It's also a large, multi-billion dollar industry. Market size estimates for 2024 typically range from, let's say, USD 30.6 billion to USD 35.3 billion.
So over $30 billion globally.
Yes. And crucially, it's projected to keep growing at a compound annual growth rate, or CAGR.
The average annual growth rate.
Right. Projected between 3.7% and 5.5% over the next 5 to 6 years.
Yeah.
Now, that might not sound explosive like tech, but for a mature industry tied to staples, that's very healthy, steady growth.
Consistent expansion.
Exactly. This growth is underpinned by stable, long-term drivers like global population growth, rising disposable incomes in emerging markets, and continuous innovation in end-use categories. Things like new functional foods or new personal care products that constantly need unique scents or flavors. What's absolutely crucial to understand is its market concentration. The F&F market is a classic oligopoly.
Oligopoly dominated by a few big players.
Precisely. This means it's an industry dominated by a small number of large sellers. In this case, it's just four major players, often referred to as the Big Four. Givaudan. DSM Firmenich.
That's the merged company, right?
Yes, DSM and Firmenich had merged recently. Then there's International Flavors and Fragrances, or IFF, and Symrise AG.
Mm-hmm.
Together, these top companies control an estimated 75% to 80% of the global market.
Wow, three quarters or more held by just four companies?
Yes. This highly consolidated structure leads to a generally rational competitive environment. In such a market, these dominant players often develop an unstated understanding, you could say. They tend to avoid ruinous price wars because they all benefit from stable margins.
It's not in their interest to slash prices.
Exactly. Competition among these players tends to focus on innovation, superior service, and quality rather than destructive price cutting, which is great for margins. Of course, that recent merger of DSM and Firmenich in May 2023 did create a new formidable competitor, intensifying the competition at the very highest level of the industry.
Shook things up a bit.
It did. But it's still a highly concentrated market where the big players largely set the tone.
So it's a tight-knit club where the big players largely set the rules, focusing on value creation and technological leadership rather than just undercutting each other on price. In such a concentrated market, do their customers, even the large CPG giants, really have limited comparable alternatives? That certainly helps explain some of the premium valuation Givaudan commands.
It certainly does. They have options. But the pool of truly capable global partners is small. Hashtag need be. Formidable barriers to entry. The Moats Foundation. Precisely. And this rational competitive environment is further reinforced by formidable and enduring barriers to entry that effectively protect the incumbent leaders like Givaudan. This is exactly what gives these companies their wide economic moat, that sustainable competitive advantage that protects long-term profits.
The moat that keeps competitors out.
Exactly. First, there's the sheer scale and R&D investment required. The absolute level of spending on research and development is a primary barrier. Givaudan, for instance, invests a substantial 7-8% of its multi-billion dollar sales into R&D annually.
7-8% is huge for R&D.
It really is, consistently. In FY 2024, that amounted to 7.6% of sales, or CHF, 565 million. That's over half a billion Swiss francs in 1 year. That's an absolute level of spending that no new entrant could possibly match. This massive sustained investment funds, vast ingredient libraries, the discovery of novel molecules, and a global network of creation centers. It's a continuous arms race of innovation that requires incredibly deep pockets, constantly expanding their palette of available scents and flavors.
You need huge scale just to play the game.
You really do. Second, we've already touched on this, is customer integration and switching costs.
Right, the stickiness factor.
That co-creation model deeply embeds F&F suppliers like Givaudan with their clients. The custom formulas that result from this collaboration are owned by the F&F company, which creates exceptionally high switching costs. Think of it this way. Once a flavor or fragrance is designed into a successful product, say a signature soft drink, it's incredibly difficult and risky for that beverage company to change it.
We talked about the risk, yeah.
They'd face immense effort in reformulation, retesting with consumers, potentially changing ingredient labels, and risking alienating their loyal fan base if the taste isn't identical. This effectively locks in those long-term relationships and creates a powerful disincentive for customers to switch, securing Givaudan's revenue streams. Third, there's regulatory expertise. This is a big one people don't often think about.
Regulations? How so?
Navigating a complex, constantly evolving global web of food safety, chemical, and environmental regulations in over 100 countries demands significant, dedicated resources and highly specialized expertise.
100 countries. That's a regulatory maze.
It absolutely is. This is a massive hurdle for smaller firms or new entrants, as a single misstep can lead to product recalls, hefty fines, or severe legal issues. Givaudan's established global regulatory teams provide a critical competitive edge. And finally, intellectual property. The core of the industry's value lies in its IP proprietary formulas for thousands of flavors and fragrances. These are often protected as highly guarded trade secrets and supported by vast patent portfolios. Givaudan alone holds over 5,000 active patents.
5,000 patents.
Covering everything from novel molecules to innovative delivery systems, this immense body of intellectual property is nearly impossible for competitors to replicate through reverse engineering or simple imitation. These aren't just advantages. They're structural defenses that fundamentally keep new players out, reinforcing Givaudan's strong position.
That truly reinforces the moat concept. It sounds like a new player attempting to enter this market would face an almost insurmountable challenge, not just in terms of capital, but in expertise, relationships, regulatory hurdles, the whole package.
It's a very high wall to climb. #C. Evolving consumer and end market trends. Beyond the structural elements of the industry, the F&F sector is directly and profoundly influenced by major shifts in consumer preferences. These trends, in turn, dictate the innovation priorities for both Givaudan and its vast customer base in consumer packaged goods.
So what are the big trends driving things now?
The most powerful and pervasive trend we're seeing is consumer demand for natural, organic, and clean label products. Essentially, products free from artificial ingredients and with understandable ingredient lists.
Clean label is everywhere.
It really is. This is forcing widespread product reformulation across food, beverage, and personal care. This, in turn, creates significant demand for natural flavors and fragrances derived from botanical and other natural sources, which Givaudan is uniquely positioned to supply, given its scale and R&D capabilities in naturals. There's also a growing demand for health and wellness benefits. Consumers are increasingly seeking products that offer functional benefits beyond basic needs.
Like added vitamins or probiotics.
Sometimes. But in the F&F space, this translates more into ingredients for natural paste masking for plant-based proteins, or flavor systems that allow for significant sugar and salt reduction without compromising taste.
Making healthy options taste good.
Exactly. And even mood-enhancing fragrances that claim to contribute to well-being, relaxation, or focus. Givaudan is actively innovating to provide these cutting-edge solutions. And, of course, sustainability and traceability are paramount. increasing awareness of environmental and social issues is leading consumers and CPG companies to demand greater transparency and sustainability in supply chains.
People want to know where their stuff comes from.
Precisely. This puts a premium on F&F companies that can provide ingredients that are not only natural but also responsibly and traceably sourced. Givaudan's long-standing programs like Sourcing for Good directly address this demand. Yeah, here's the critical insight, what I sometimes call the paradoxical strengthening effect.
Paradoxical strengthening. Okay, intriguing.
While the trend towards natural ingredients creates significant growth opportunities, it also introduces substantial operational challenges. Natural raw materials are inherently more volatile than synthetic ones.
Price fluctuations, supply issues.
Exactly. Price, quality, supply. They're subject to agricultural variables like weather, crop cycles, even geopolitical stability in sourcing regions. But this paradoxically strengthens the largest, most sophisticated players like Givaudan.
How so?
Managing a global supply chain of thousands of distinct natural ingredients from over 100 countries requires immense, resilient infrastructure. Givaudan's capabilities here are truly unparalleled. Smaller competitors simply lack the scale, the purchasing power, and the sophisticated risk management capabilities to build and maintain such a complex sourcing network.
So the complexity itself becomes a barrier.
Yes. The very trend that fuels market demand also elevates the barriers to entry, turning a potential supply chain risk into a key competitive differentiator for the industry leaders. It makes the big players even stronger.
That's a critical insight for understanding this market. It means that even trends that seem challenging, like the inherent volatility of natural ingredients, actually reinforce the leaders' positions because of the immense complexity involved in managing those supply chains. They essentially turn a potential weakness into a formidable strength.
Well put. That's exactly it.
Being the biggest isn't always enough to consistently outperform, though. So how does Givaudan maintain that leadership position and consistently stand out from even its big four rivals like DSM Firmenich or IFF? What are the true pillars of its competitive advantage that set it apart? It can't just be size.
No, size helps, but execution matters more. Givaudan's market leadership is really built on three pillars of competitive advantage that are incredibly difficult for rivals, even its large peers, to replicate fully. It's about how they leverage their scale. First is its innovation and R&D prowess. We talked about the spending level, 7-8% of sales.
The half-billion CHF figure.
Right. This isn't just spending for spending's sake. It fuels a truly powerful innovation engine. It supports a pipeline of novel molecules, advanced biotechnologies for creating sustainable ingredients like fermentation-derived materials and proprietary delivery systems.
Delivery systems, like microencapsulation.
Exactly. Things that ensure flavors and fragrances last longer or are released more effectively, say, in laundry detergent or a beverage. This continuous expansion of its palette of ingredients and technologies allows Givaudan to constantly stay ahead of consumer trends and offer unique, value-added solutions that often no one else can. They're not just reacting to market demands. They're actively shaping the future of taste and scent. Second, their supply chain and sourcing mastery is truly world-class. We mentioned it briefly.
11,000 materials, 3,000 suppliers.
Exactly. Givaudan manages this extraordinarily complex global supply chain. Think about the logistical and quality control challenges involved in that. Mastering this involves ensuring consistent quality, managing drastic price volatility from agricultural commodities, and navigating geopolitical risks from every corner of the globe.
It sounds like a nightmare to manage.
It's incredibly complex. They've also been strategically increasing vertical integration for key natural ingredients. For example, through their acquisition of Naturex a few years back.
Vertical integration meaning they own more of the supply chain.
Right. Owning farms or processing facilities for certain key botanicals. This secures their supply and significantly enhances traceability, which, as we said, is crucial for meeting the rising demand for natural and sustainably sourced ingredients. This complex logistical capability is a competitive marvel in itself. And third, it's their unique customer relationships and that deep co-creation model we've discussed.
Back to the stickiness.
Yes. The business model is fundamentally based on true partnership, not just transactional sales. Their highly skilled perfumers and flavorists are deeply integrated with customer innovation teams, working collaboratively, sometimes for months or even years, to co-create bespoke solutions for new products.
Almost like consultants embedded in the client?
Very much so. This intensive process results in exclusive, indispensable solutions that foster incredibly long-term, sticky relationships with their clients. They effectively become an extension of their customers' own creative and R&D departments, making them an irreplaceable partner in many cases.
That paints a picture of a company not just reacting to the market, but actively shaping it through deep collaboration and relentless innovation. It's a powerful testament to their strategy of becoming an indispensable partner rather than just a supplier.
It's deeply ingrained in their culture and operations. Hashtag, tag, tag, be peer benchmark and relative performance. To really underscore their competitive edge, it's helpful to compare Givaudan against its closest rivals. While direct market share data is often proprietary and closely guarded,
they don't publish exact shares.
No. But Givaudan's position as the largest by revenue is well established within the industry. Everyone accepts that. But more importantly, when you look at a comparative analysis like the one presented in Table 1 in our source materials, it consistently reveals superior operational performance across several key metrics.
Okay, how do they stack up financially?
Givaudan consistently demonstrates higher and more stable profitability. For example, their trailing 12-month EBITDA margins are in the range of 22.4% to 23.8%.
EBIT margin, that's a core profitability measure, right?
Exactly. Earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. It shows how efficient they are at generating profit from their core business before financing and accounting decisions. A high EBITDA margin like Givaudan's tells you they're incredibly efficient at turning sales into profit.
And how does that compare?
It's notably higher than peers like IFF, which is around 19.2%, or the newly merged Dam and Firmenich at about 16.6%. It's even slightly ahead of Symrise, which is usually around 20.7%, so they lead the pack there. They also show robust free cash flow conversion with a trailing 12-month FCF margin of approximately 15.6%.
FCF is the cash left over after investments, right? The cash they can actually use or return.
That's right. Free cash flow is the cash a company generates after accounting for cash outflows to support operations and maintain its capital assets. It's essentially the cash available to be distributed to investors or used for debt repayment or acquisitions.
And 15.6% margin is good?
Very good. It generally leads peers as well. For instance, IFF is around 5.3%, and Diesem Firmenich is about 12.1%. Mm-hmm. Symrise is quite close in terms of operating cash flow, maybe around 18%. But Givaudan's FCF conversion is typically very strong. And their like-for-like, LFL, or organic growth, is often superior. It was an exceptional 12.3% in FY 2024 compared to IFF's 6.0%, Symrise's 8.7%, and Diesem Firmenich's 4.0%.
LFL removes currency effects in acquisitions.
Exactly. LFL growth measures sales growth, excluding currency fluctuations and the impact of acquisitions or divestitures, giving a clearer picture of the underlying business health and momentum. This consistent, high-quality financial performance, better margins, strong cash flow, often better organic growth is a key factor supporting its premium valuation in the market. The numbers really do back up the quality story.
Those figures really underscore their operational discipline. It's one thing to be the largest, but to couple that with this level of efficiency and consistent profitability clearly differentiates them. They're not just big. They're arguably best in class in their financial execution.
That seems fair to say based on the data.
Let's talk more about those hard numbers then. How has Givaudan performed financially in recent years, especially given all the global economic volatility we've seen from 2021 to 2024? Can they truly sustain this kind of growth? That 12.3% LFL in 2024 sounds almost too good to be true.
It was an exceptional year, certainly. But Givaudan has a distinguished history of delivering consistent growth, industry-leading profitability, and robust cash flow. Its performance through recent macroeconomic volatility from 2021 to 2024 truly reaffirms the resilience of its business model and its strong execution capabilities. When you look at their strategic ambition for the 2021-2025 cycle, their official target was 4-5% average like-for-like or LFL sales growth per year.
So 4-5% was the goal?
Yes. What's impressive is that they have significantly outpaced this target so far. Let's break it down. In FY 2022, they posted solid 5.3% LFL growth on CHF $7.1 billion in sales. This was despite rising costs and supply chain disruptions affecting many other companies.
So already above the high end of the target range.
Correct. Then in FY 2023, growth moderated slightly to 4.1% LFL on CHF $6.9 billion sales. Still within the target range. Mm-hmm. But this year was a classic tale of two drivers. They had a negative volume mix impact of Meta 2.2%.
Meaning they sold slightly less stuff.
Yes. Primarily due to customer destocking clients reducing inventory in what's known as shrinkflation, where product sizes get smaller, but prices don't necessarily decrease proportionally. But crucially, this volume dip was more than offset by powerful pricing, which contributed an impressive plus 6.3%.
Wow, 6.3% from price increases alone.
Yes. This really demonstrated their exceptional pricing power, a core tenet of a wide moat business. And then FY 2024 was exceptionally strong, with LFL sales surging by that 12.3% to CHF 7.4 billion.
What drove that big jump?
It was primarily driven by a significant volume recovery, which saw nearly 10% growth as customers restocked inventories and consumer demand rebounded strongly in many categories. This was complemented by a residual pricing impact of just under 3%, mainly coming from hyperinflationary markets where they had to adjust prices significantly. So for the entire four-year period from 2021-2024, Givaudan achieved an impressive average LFL sales growth of 7.2%.
7.2% average, well above their 4-5% target.
Well above. Management is now stating it's highly likely they'll exceed their five-year goal, which is a strong indicator of consistent outperformance and effective strategy execution.
That's remarkable, especially considering the inflation, the supply chain issues, the geopolitical uncertainty of the last few years. It really shows how fundamental their products are, that they can continue to grow at that pace.
The resilience is quite clear. #B. Pricing power and margin expansion, absolutely. And a true hallmark of Givaudan's business quality, as we saw in those 2023 numbers, is its ability to protect and even expand profitability, particularly its demonstrable pricing power during that inflationary spike of 2022-2023.
They could pass costs on.
Yes. Management explicitly confirmed that they were able to fully compensate for rising input costs, which was a rare and impressive feat for many businesses struggling with surging raw material and energy prices at that time. Looking at their EBITDA margin trajectory, you can see this in action, showing their operational efficiency. The reported EBITDA margin was 20.7% in 2022.
Okay.
Then it improved to a reported 21.3% in 2023. Though on a comparable basis, excluding some one-offs, it was even better at 22.4%.
So margins went up despite inflation.
They did. And then they expanded significantly to a reported 23.8% in 2024, or 24.5% on that comparable basis.
Nearly 25% comparable EBITDA margin. That's very high.
It's truly industry-leading. The strong margin expansion in 2024 was attributed to three key factors by management. Significant operating leverage from that strong volume rebound we just discussed, selling more stuff, spreads, fixed costs.
Makes sense.
A more benign raw materials price environment as some key input costs started to ease off their peaks.
So cost pressures lessened.
Somewhat, yes. And the continued benefits of their internal cost control programs and efficiency initiatives, this combination allowed them to not only recover from cost pressures, but actually enhance their profitability.
So they didn't just survive inflation, they actively protected and even grew their margins through a challenging period. That's a powerful testament to their strong market position and the essential sticky nature of their products. It suggests they truly hold significant pricing power. The evidence points strongly in that direction. #C, robust cash flow generation. Indeed. Givaudan is also a highly cash generative business, which is really a cornerstone of its investment case and provides immense financial flexibility. Their strategic target, part of that 2025 plan, is to deliver an average free cash flow, FCF, as a percentage of sales of at least 12% over their five-year strategic cycle.
So aiming for 12 cents of free cash for every dollar of sales.
Exactly. And they've consistently hit and impressively exceeded this target. In FY 2023, the company achieved a record FCF of CHF 920 million, which represented a very strong 13.3% of sales.
Above the 12% target.
Yes. And then in FY 2024, they surpassed that record again, generating an FCF of CHF 1,158 million over a billion Swiss francs. That was equivalent to an impressive 15.6% of sales.
The 15.6%, significantly above target.
Significantly. This robust and consistent cash generation provides the financial firepower for all their capital allocation priorities, including vital organic investments back into the business, targeted bolt-on acquisitions to expand capabilities, and importantly for many investors, that steadily increasing dividend for shareholders. This predictability in cash flow is highly valued by the market.
Consistent, robust cash generation is often the hallmark of a truly high-quality business, isn't it? It enables a lot of strategic flexibility and predictability for investors, allowing them to reinvest for growth and reward shareholders simultaneously.
It's a sign of a healthy, well-managed company. #D, returns on capital. And looking deeper into their financial efficiency, Givaudan's ability to generate attractive returns on the capital it employs is a key measure of its value creation over time.
How well are they using their money?
Essentially, yes. For the trailing 12 months, their return on invested capital, or ROIC, was cited at 9.62%. Think of ROIC as how much profit a company generates for every dollar of capital, both debt and equity, it is invested in its business. It's a crucial measure of how well management is using its capital pool to create value.
Is 9.6% good?
In absolute terms, it's solid, but it's most important to compare it against the company's weighted average cost of capital, or WACC.
WACC, the cost of their funding.
Exactly. The WACC represents the average rate of return a company expects to pay to its investors, both debt and equity holders, for financing its assets. If ROIC exceeds WACC, it means the company is creating economic profit, genuinely generating more value than its capital costs.
And is Givaudan doing that?
Given the low-risk nature of Givaudan's business defensive end markets, stable cash flows, and generally low borrowing costs, especially in Switzerland, it is highly probable that their 9.6% ROIC does indeed exceed their WACC. This means they're consistently creating economic value. Their return on equity, or ROE, was also strong at 25.99% for the trailing 12 months.
Nearly 26% ROE. That sounds very high.
It's strong. ROE measures how much profit a company generates for each dollar of shareholder equity, reflecting a highly efficient use of just the shareholder's capital to generate profits.
You mentioned ROIC needing to exceed WACC to confirm economic profit. For you listening, why is that distinction so important, and what does it truly signal about Givaudan's management of capital and its ability to compound value over time?
It's absolutely vital because it tells you if the business is genuinely creating wealth or just, you know, treading water or worse. Many companies can generate revenue or even accounting profits, but if they're not earning more on their invested capital, then that capital costs them.
Then they aren't really adding value.
Exactly. In essence, they could be destroying value for shareholders over the long run, even if the profit line looks okay. Givaudan's consistently solid ROIC, likely above its WACC, signals that their management is highly effective at deploying capital into projects, whether it's R&D, new facilities, or smart acquisitions that generate a return greater than their cost of financing.
So they make good investment decisions.
It suggests they do. This is the very definition of a compounder, a business that can continually reinvest its earnings at high rates of return, leading to exponential growth and intrinsic value over time. It shows financial discipline and strategic foresight in capital allocation. It's a key marker of quality.
That's a powerful explanation of their financial discipline and value creation.
Okay.
Now, looking forward, how is Givaudan planning to continue this impressive trajectory? What's their roadmap for the future, and how are they planning to stay ahead in such a dynamic industry? What's the plan beyond 2025?
Well, their current forward-looking strategy, titled Committed to Growth with Purpose, covers the 2021-2025 cycle, and they're already performing well against it. We'd expect the next cycle's strategy to build on similar themes. The current plan is designed to leverage their core strengths while systematically expanding into adjacent high-growth areas. It's underpinned by three primary drivers that really encapsulate their proactive approach. First, they aim to expand the portfolio. This means moving beyond their traditional F&F core into complementary higher-growth adjacencies. Like, for example, they're making a significant push into natural food colors, an area solidified by their acquisition of DDW a couple of years ago. They're also placing a deeper focus on active beauty, which involves providing those scientifically proven active ingredients for cosmetics, think anti-aging or skin-soothing compounds. This broadens their offering and taps into new, lucrative markets driven by evolving consumer demands for natural and efficacious products. Second, they're focused on extending customer reach. We talked about the local and regional customers.
The 58% of sales.
Right, so deepening penetration with those fast-growing local and regional customers who are often more agile innovators. Simultaneously, they're continuing to invest heavily in high-growth emerging markets to capture demand from the rising global middle class, establishing local hubs and creation centers to tailor products to specific regional tastes and needs. It's about being global and local. And third, they have focused strategies for high-growth spaces. This means dedicating significant resources in R&D to specific high-potential areas. Examples include developing comprehensive solutions for the rapidly expanding plant-based food category, which often presents tricky taste-masking challenges.
Making veggie burgers taste better.
Essentially, yes. Further expanding their health and well-being portfolio, think natural solutions for sugar reduction or functional fragrances that promote relaxation, and pioneering sustainable solutions that meet the increasing demand for environmentally friendly products throughout the value chain.
So it's a multi-pronged approach, diversifying their product offerings into related areas, expanding their customer base, particularly smaller, faster ones, and doubling down on key growth trends like health and plant-based. It's a very proactive and adaptive strategy.
It seems well aligned with market trends. Hashtag, tag, B, strategic M&A and digital transformation.
That's right. Right.
And Givaudan's M&A activity is a perfect example of their strategic, intelligent approach to growth. They explicitly focus on targeted bolt-on acquisitions rather than large, risky mega mergers.
Bolt-ons meaning smaller, specific additions.
Exactly. These are typically smaller deals designed to bring specific high-growth capabilities, niche technologies, or market access into the organization without the massive integration challenges and financial risks of a large-scale merger. You see this in recent acquisitions like Volmens, which gave them deeper local customer access in Brazil, Custom Essence for natural perfumery expertise, DDW for natural colors, as we mentioned, parts of Amyris's ingredients business for sustainable beauty solutions using biotech, and Mirissi, which brings cutting-edge AI capabilities in fragrance creation.
AI and fragrance, how does that work?
Mirissi's technology can apparently translate fragrances into color patterns and images, providing a novel, intuitive way to communicate scent concepts to customers and potentially speed up development cycles. It's fascinating.
Interesting.
This plug-in M&A strategy is quite clever. They acquire a niche technology or capability and then leverage their massive global distribution and manufacturing platform to rapidly scale that acquired innovation across their vast customer base. It's generally seen as a lower-risk, higher-return approach compared to the immense capital outlay and integration headaches of transformative mergers. It allows them to integrate quickly and extract value efficiently. Alongside M&A, they're proactively integrating digital tools and advanced technologies to enhance innovation and efficiency across the board.
So embracing digital.
Very much so. They are leveraging artificial intelligence, or AI, to accelerate the creation process. Mirissi is one example. They're also developing digital co-creation platforms for seamless customer collaboration, which shortens development timelines and improves outcomes by allowing real-time feedback and iterative design between Givaudan and its clients.
This isn't just about traditional chemistry anymore, is it? It's about leveraging cutting-edge tech and smart acquisitions to stay ahead in a very sophisticated and rapidly evolving market. It really shows a company embracing the future.
They seem to be investing heavily in that direction. #C. Sustainability as a business driver. And another key part of their strategy, which connects to those trends we discussed, is sustainability. For Givaudan, sustainability isn't just, you know, a corporate social responsibility checkbox or a marketing buzzword.
It's not just greenwashing.
They argue it's not. They position it as a core component of its business strategy and a genuine source of competitive advantage. They have incredibly ambitious goals, such as becoming climate positive before 2050 and sourcing 100% of their materials responsibly by 2030.
Those are big goals.
They are. And they state these aren't just aspirational targets. They are being deeply integrated into their operations, supply chain management, and strategic planning. For example, their Sourcing for Good program aims to ensure ethical and sustainable practices right back to the farm level for naturals. By offering a portfolio of sustainably sourced, traceable, and biodegradable ingredients, Givaudan directly meets a critical and growing demand from its CPG customers.
Who are getting pressure from their customers.
Exactly. The CPG companies are themselves facing immense pressure from end consumers about their environmental footprint and ethical sourcing. So Givaudan providing solutions helps them meet their goals. This leadership in sustainability differentiates their offerings, strengthens their partnerships with sustainability-focused customers, and often allows them to command a premium for these value-added, responsibly produced solutions. It's presented as truly a virtuous cycle, where being good for the planet also means being good for business.
So, their commitment to sustainability isn't just altruistic. It's positioned as a shrewd strategic business move that enhances their competitive edge and potentially their profitability. It's an investment in their long-term future and market relevance.
That's certainly how they frame it, and it aligns with where consumer and client demands are heading. #Chevin, capital allocation and financial discipline.
With all this strong financial performance and robust cash generation we've talked about, how does Givaudan actually decide where to put its money? What's their disciplined approach to capital allocation? You know, where does that billion plus in free cash flow go?
That's a crucial question. Givaudan's financial strategy is really characterized by discipline, consistency, and a very clear focus on long-term shareholder value creation. Their robust free cash flow generation provides the solid foundation for a balanced capital allocation framework, which they communicate very clearly to investors.
So they have clear priorities.
Yes, explicitly ordered priorities. First, they prioritize organic investment. This means reinvesting back into the business to drive organic growth. This includes capital expenditures, CapEx for maintaining and expanding their global production footprint, and crucially, sustained industry-leading investment in research and development.
Funding the innovation engine firm.
Exactly. That R&D is the very lifeblood of their innovation and future competitive advantage. Second, after fully funding organic growth needs, they focus on value-creating M&A. They actively seek those targeted bolt-on acquisitions that we discussed.
The strategic additions.
Right. Deals that specifically align with their strategic goals, things like naturals, health and well-being, active beauty, or enhancing their access to local and regional customers. They're quite selective here, looking for capabilities that can be scaled effectively across their existing massive global platform, not just buying growth for growth's sake. And only after funding these internal and external growth drivers, their third priority is the return of capital to shareholders.
So paying shareholders comes last.
In terms of priority, yes, after ensuring the business has the capital it needs to grow sustainably. They are committed to returning excess cash, primarily through a progressive dividend. While share buybacks have been used in the past to manage capital structure or return cash, they're not currently presented as a primary pillar of their capital return policy. The focus is the dividend.
Okay.
This hierarchy reflects a very sensible and proven approach for a high-quality compounder. Grow the business first through internal and external investments, then reward shareholders with consistent growing returns from the cash that's left over.
It sounds like a very prudent and long-term focused approach. Grow the business first, then reward shareholders with a reliable payout. That clear signal of confidence and discipline is highly valued by long-term investors, isn't it?
Generally, yes. Consistency and clarity are prized. #... Be progressive dividend policy. And their dividend policy is truly a cornerstone of its shareholder return proposition and a testament to their financial strength and confidence over decades. Givaudan explicitly aims to pay a progressive dividend.
Progressive meaning it goes up over time.
Ideally. Yes. Increasing over time, reflecting the underlying growth in its cash flow and earnings. They don't promise an increase every single year, but the long-term trend is clearly upwards, and they have an exceptional track record here. Following the proposed dividend of CHF 70.00 per share for fiscal year 2024, the company will have increased its dividend for 24 consecutive years since its IPO back in 2000.
24 straight years of increases. That's incredible.
It's a remarkable feat in the corporate world. It puts Givaudan on the cusp of joining the exclusive ranks of dividend aristocrats, a select group of companies known for consistently increasing their dividends for at least 25 years. So one more year, and they're officially in that club.
Wow.
This dividend is exceptionally well supported by their strong free cash flow generation, resulting in a sustainable payout ratio of approximately 59% of trailing 12-month earnings.
The payout ratio being the percentage of earnings paid out as dividends.
It's exactly. A payout ratio around 60% indicates they are retaining a good portion of earnings for reinvestment while still providing a healthy return to shareholders. It suggests plenty of room for continued dividend growth without putting financial strain on the company.
That's an incredible track record of consistency and reliability, isn't it? For long-term investors, that signals a company they can truly count on, providing a growing income stream even through market volatility.
It's a very strong signal of financial health and management commitment to shareholders. #... She's prudent debt levels. And to enable all this strategic growth and shareholder returns without taking undue risk, Givaudan maintains a prudent and conservative approach to its balance sheet.
They don't borrow too much.
Generally, no. As of December 2024, their net debt, total debt minus cash and cash equivalents, stood at approximately CHF 4.0
billion. 4 billion sounds like a lot, but how does it compare to earnings?
That's the key question. The key leverage metric analysts look at is net debt to EBITDA. At year-end 2024, Givaudan's ratio was a comfortable 2.3x.
2.3 times EBITDA? Is that high or low?
For a stable, highly cash-generative business like Givaudan, 2.3x is considered quite comfortable and well within typical ranges. It's not overly leveraged.
Right.
A healthy leverage ratio like this provides significant financial flexibility. It means they have capacity to fund ongoing growth initiatives, to weather potential economic downturns, and importantly, to seize strategic M&A opportunities as they arise, all without undue financial strain or risking their investment-grade credit rating.
So they have plenty of room to maneuver financially, which is critical in an unpredictable global economy, giving them that strategic flexibility and resilience we discussed earlier. They aren't stretched thin.
Correct. They maintain a strong financial position. #... Navigating challenges and headwinds, 2022-2024.
Of course, no company, no matter how strong its moat or finances, is entirely immune to global pressures.
What specific challenges and headwinds has Givaudan faced recently, especially in the last few turbulent years from 2022 to 2024? And perhaps more importantly, how did they manage those?
You're right. Even Givaudan faced significant headwinds. The global inflationary spike of 2022 and early 2023 presented major challenges, as it did for almost every industry globally. They faced significant increases in the cost of raw materials, energy, and logistics, impacting their overall cost base quite substantially.
So costs went up sharply.
They did. However, as we highlighted earlier when discussing margins, Givaudan demonstrated exceptional pricing power during this period. Management repeatedly stated, and the numbers seem to bear this out, that they successfully implemented price increases to fully compensate for these higher input costs.
Passing it on to customers.
Yes, thereby protecting and even, as we saw, growing their profitability margins. By 2024, the situation had eased significantly, with management noting a generally benign raw materials price environment compared to the peaks. And this easing certainly contributed to that year's strong margin expansion. It shows a very effective and agile response to significant external cost pressures.
That really reinforces what we heard earlier about their pricing power. They truly seem to have the ability to pass on costs when necessary, which is a powerful indicator of their market strength and the unique value proposition of their customized products.
It's a key strength, no doubt. Hashtag #ShagB. Supply chain and geopolitical tensions. Beyond just inflation, the post-pandemic period continued to present complex supply chain challenges, which were further exacerbated by geopolitical events, most notably the Russia-Ukraine conflict.
How did that impact them?
That conflict had a broad impact on the European chemical sector, primarily through elevated energy costs, particularly for natural gas, and also disruptions to the supply of specific raw materials sourced from that region or transported through it. Givaudan's formal risk management framework explicitly identifies disruption of supply chain suppliers due to geopolitical tensions as a key operational risk. It's something they actively monitor and plan for.
So they were prepared.
They have mitigation strategies. They actively manage this risk through comprehensive business continuity planning, which involves things like qualifying backup suppliers, holding strategic inventory for critical materials, and maintaining a globally diversified sourcing strategy to reduce reliance on any single region. It highlights the foresight and constant adaptation needed to manage a truly global operation today, constantly adapting to an unpredictable world. You can't eliminate the risk, but you can manage it.
It highlights the immense complexity of managing a global operation today and how proactive they have to be to mitigate these kinds of complex, interconnected risks. Constant vigilance required.
Absolutely. #C. Regulatory scrutiny and antitrust probe. Another area of increasing challenge and potential risk is the regulatory landscape, particularly in Europe, which often sets precedents globally for chemical ingredients.
Tighter rules on chemicals.
Yes. The regulatory environment is becoming increasingly stringent. A recent example is the EU's decision to ban 8 specific smoke flavorings due to potential genotoxicity concerns, with a phase-out period extending to 2029-2031.
Smoke flavorings? Like for BBQ chips?
Exactly. Those kinds of applications. Now, while this specific ban may not have a material direct financial impact on a company the size of Givaudan, it is indicative of a broader trend towards stricter scrutiny of chemical ingredients across the board, particularly synthetic ones or those produced in novel ways.
What could that lead to?
This could lead to increased R&D costs for reformulation efforts, the need to develop alternative ingredients, or even the removal of certain established ingredients from their palette in the future if regulators deem them unsafe under new standards. It's a constant compliance challenge. However, a more immediate and, frankly, significant concern, and one that creates notable uncertainty for Givaudan and its major peers, is the industry-wide antitrust investigation launched by European and Swiss authorities.
Antitrust, like price fixing.
Yes, what's being investigated. In March 2023, Givaudan confirmed that it was a target of this probe, which is examining a possible price-fixing cartel in the supply of fragrances and fragrance ingredients.
That sounds serious.
It is potentially very serious. This represents a material contingent liability, meaning a potential future cost, with the possibility of significant financial penalties, substantial litigation costs, and serious reputational damage, which could impact customer relationships even if they are cleared. The issue remains unresolved, and its outcome is a major overhang, a cloud of uncertainty for the company and its key competitors in the industry.
This is a crucial area for you, our listener, to watch. Regulatory changes, and especially the outcome of this antitrust investigation, could have a real and substantial impact on their business, their financials, and their reputation. It's a significant unknown that needs careful monitoring.
Definitely one of the key risks right now. Hashtag tag D currency headwinds. One final persistent and often significant headwind for Givaudan, given its home base, is the strength of its reporting currency, the Swiss franc, or CHF.
Ah, yes, the strong Swiss franc problem.
It's a recurring theme. As a Swiss-domiciled company, the vast majority of its revenue is earned in other currencies, predominantly the U.S. dollar and the euro. A persistently strong CHF creates what's called a translational headwind.
Translational meaning it affects the reported numbers, not the underlying business.
Primarily, yes.
Yeah.
It means that even if the business is growing strongly in local currency terms in various markets around the world, when those revenues and profits are converted back into Swiss francs for reporting purposes, the reported sales and profit growth appear lower than the underlying operational performance.
Can you give an example?
Sure. We mentioned FY 2023 earlier. Givaudan's like-for-like growth in local currencies was a solid plus 4.1%. But after the negative impact of currency conversion due to the strong franc, its reported sales in CHF actually declined by negative 2.8%.
So it looked like sales shrank even though the business grew locally.
Exactly. This is a crucial factor for investors to consider when analyzing the company's reported financials. It consistently dampens their reported growth figures compared to their operational reality, and it certainly explains some of the discrepancies you might see between their stated organic growth targets or achievements and the final reported CHF results.
So even if the business is thriving and expanding strongly in local markets, the strong Swiss franc can make their reported numbers look less impressive, a sort of invisible drag on their headline figures. It's a good reminder for you to always look beyond headline figures and understand the underlying currency dynamics, especially for global companies like Givaudan.
Essential to dig a bit deeper than the headlines, yes.
Beyond the numbers, the markets, the risks, who is actually steering this ship? How strong and stable is Givaudan's leadership team, and what does that mean for its future strategy and execution?
That's a great question, because leadership matters immensely. Givaudan is led by a highly experienced and, frankly, exceptionally stable executive team. It's characterized by remarkably long tenures within the company.
People stick around for a long time.
For a very long time. This provides a level of strategic continuity and deep institutional knowledge that is quite rare in the corporate world today, and it really shapes the company's direction and successful execution over the long term. The current CEO, Gilles Andrier, has served in that top role since March 2005.
Since 2005, that's nearly two decades as CEO.
It is. And he actually joined Givaudan way back in 1993, holding numerous leadership roles across the organization before becoming CEO. His long stewardship has been absolutely instrumental in shaping the company's successful strategy of disciplined growth, strategic bolt-on M&A, and consistent shareholder returns that we've discussed. And it's not just him. The broader executive committee also boasts an impressive average tenure of approximately 20 years with the company.
20 years on average for the top team?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. This deep well of industry knowledge and internal experience fosters a consistent corporate culture, ensures a thorough understanding of the company's complex global operations, and enables effective long-term strategic planning. There's a lot of stability there. Now, while this stability is a significant strength and clearly a driver of their past success, it also introduces a material long-term consideration or risk, depending on your perspective.
Which is?
The long and successful tenure of the CEO, who's now 64 years old, naturally brings the topic of succession planning to the forefront. His leadership is deeply intertwined with the company's modern identity and success, so an eventual transition could introduce a period of strategic uncertainty, or at least change.
When will he retire, and who takes over?
Exactly. Although the board of directors states that it continuously discusses succession planning, as you'd expect, the external visibility into this process is inherently low. We don't know the specific plan. This key person risk associated with such a long-serving and successful CEO and the opacity of the long-term succession plan represent a notable, albeit difficult to quantify, risk for long-term investors. It's something to certainly keep in mind.
This deep well of experience is incredibly reassuring in the short to medium term, providing stability and consistency, but it also raises valid questions about continuity in the long run. It's a classic trade-off. Stability today versus the potential challenge of succession tomorrow.
It's a factor to consider for any long-term view, yes. Hashtag B strategic vision and execution. Despite that inherent long-term succession question, Givaudan's current management team has an absolutely exemplary track record of setting clear, long-term strategic goals and then executing against them with remarkable consistency.
They do what they say they'll do.
Pretty much, yes. The company operates on these five-year strategic cycles. They successfully delivered on their ambitious targets for the 2016-2020 cycle. And crucially, as we discussed with the financials, they are currently well on track to exceed the high end of their growth targets for the current 2021-2025 strategic plan. This history of credible guidance and consistent execution inspires a very high degree of confidence in management's strategic vision and their ability to deliver on their promises. That's a rare and valuable trait in large corporations, and it contributes significantly to their premium reputation.
Their ability to consistently meet or exceed their own ambitious targets speaks volumes about their discipline, their foresight, and their execution capabilities. That's something you don't always see, and it certainly contributes to their reputation as a high-quality, reliable business.
Credibility is hard-earned. #see strong corporate governance. Finally, on the governance side, Givaudan appears to adhere to very high standards of corporate governance, which is designed to protect shareholder interests and ensure responsible management oversight.
Good governance practices.
Yes. A standout feature mentioned in the sources is that 100% of the members of their board of directors are non-executive and independent.
Meaning they aren't company employees and have no conflicts.
Essentially, yes. They aren't part of the day-to-day management. This structure ensures robust oversight of the executive team and minimizes potential conflicts of interest, which is truly a hallmark of best-in-class governance practices. The board also operates through four specialized committees: audit, compensation, nomination, and governance, and notably, a dedicated innovation committee.
An innovation committee at the board level? That's unusual.
It is quite noteworthy. The existence of an innovation committee at the board level underscores just how strategically central R&D and innovation are to the company's long-term value creation and competitive positioning. It shows that innovation isn't just something discussed in the labs or by R&D teams. It's a strategic priority, discussed and overseen at the very highest levels of the company, baked into their core decision-making and strategy.
The presence of an innovation committee at the board level really highlights how central innovation is to their long-term strategy, doesn't it? It's not just a buzzword for them. It's embedded in their core governance structure.
It sends a strong signal about their priorities, yes.
Okay, now for the critical question that ties all of this together. How does a market actually value all this quality, this resilience, this consistent performance, strong governance, everything we've discussed? Is Givaudan a good investment at its current price? Because quality often comes at a price.
That's the million-dollar question, or perhaps the multi-billion-dollar question in this case. Valuing Givaudan requires a nuanced approach. You absolutely have to acknowledge both its superior quality and its correspondingly high market valuation. The central question for a prospective investor isn't really whether the company deserves to trade at a premium to the broader market. I think based on everything we've discussed, it clearly does deserve some premium.
The quality justifies a higher price tag.
To an extent, yes. The real question is whether the current premium adequately reflects its future growth prospects and inherent risks, leaving any margin of safety for new investors entering now. Is it already fully priced or even overpriced? When you look at comparable company analysis, using metrics that compare it to its peers, like the data in Table 1 from our sources, Givaudan consistently trades at a premium.
How much of a premium?
For instance, its trailing 12-month price-to-earnings, or PE ratio, is approximately 30.0x based on recent data.
PE of 30, that sounds high compared to the general market.
It is significantly higher than the broader market average, and it's generally at the upper end of its direct peer group in the F&F industry. Interestingly though, historically, if PE has averaged around 35.3x over the last 10 years.
So 30x is actually below its own historical average.
Slightly, yes. Which suggests that while it's expensive relative to the market, it might not be excessively so compared to its own track record. Still, 30 times earnings is a significant multiple. Similarly, its enterprise value to EBITDA, or EVBITDA ratio, is in the range of 21.0x to 24.0x.
EVBITDA, another common valuation metric.
Yes, it looks at the total value of a company relative to its operating earnings, useful for comparing companies with different debt levels. Givaudan's ratio here is substantially higher than IFF and DSM Firmenich, but often more in line with Symrise, which also commands a premium. This reflects Givaudan's industry-leading EBITDA margins we talked about earlier. Higher profitability justifies a higher multiple. This persistent valuation premium is a direct reflection of the market's clear recognition of Givaudan's wide economic moat, its stable and defensive growth profile, its strong pricing power, and its consistent free cash flow generation. The market clearly understands and values the quality here. But what does that mean for you as a potential investor today? Is the price too high?
So the market clearly loves Givaudan and is willing to pay up for its quality and predictability. But what does that mean for someone considering it from an investment perspective? Does a high price inherently mean less opportunity for future returns?
It certainly means the bar for future performance is set very high. #TagTagCB. Discounted cash flow, DCF, analysis framework, illustrative. To try and get a handle on intrinsic value, separate from market multiples, analysts often use a discounted cash flow or DCF analysis. Even if we're not building a full model here for you, understanding the key inputs helps clarify how valuation is determined and highlights the critical assumptions that drive a company's theoretical worth.
DCF tries to estimate what the company is worth based on its future cash flows.
Exactly. You project future free cash flows and then discount them back to their present value using a discount rate that reflects the riskiest of those cash flows. You'd start with key inputs. The risk-free rate, which, as we noted for Switzerland, is remarkably low, maybe around 0.3-0.4% for a 10-year government bond currently. This low rate acts as an anchor and can significantly boost valuations as future cash flows are discounted less heavily. Then you determine the equity risk premium, ERP, which is the extra return investors demand for taking on the risk of investing in stocks over risk-free assets. This needs to be carefully estimated, likely using a blended rate for a global company like Givaudan operating worldwide. Their beta, a measure of a stock's volatility relative to the overall market, is cited at a very low 0.35.
Low beta means less volatile than the market.
Much less volatile, yes, reflecting its defensive nature and stable earnings. This low beta also contributes to a lower discount rate, WACC. For the forecast period, typically 5 or maybe 10 years, revenue growth assumptions would likely start near their recent strong 7.2% average LFL growth and then gradually taper down towards a long-term industry growth rate of around 4%, or maybe slightly less. EBITDA margins would likely be held near those strong recent levels, perhaps around 23-24%, assuming sustained pricing power. And free cash flow conversion would be modeled at over 12% of sales, maybe even higher, based on management's targets and track record. Finally, you need a terminal value, which represents the value of the company beyond the explicit forecast period, stretching out into perpetuity. This is often a huge chunk of the DCF value. It would be calculated using a perpetual growth rate, perhaps in the range of 2.0-2.5%, reflecting assumptions about long-term global GDP growth and inflation.
So lots of assumptions go into this.
A huge number. And that's why a sensitivity analysis is absolutely crucial for any DCF model. The sources mention one, Table 3. It shows how the calculated intrinsic value changes based on different assumptions for the key drivers, particularly the weighted average cost of capital, WACC, the discount rate, and that terminal growth rate.
Small changes can have big impacts.
Very big impacts. A sensitivity analysis really highlights how much the final valuation can swing based on those inputs. For a company like Givaudan, where the terminal value is likely significant, even small changes in growth assumptions or discount rates can lead to significant differences in the calculated intrinsic value. It really shows the range of potential outcomes.
It truly shows you how sensitive a valuation can be to underlying assumptions, even for a seemingly stable and high-quality company like Givaudan. It's not just a single fixed number spit out by a model, but a range dependent on those critical inputs and future expectations.
Exactly. Valuation is part art, part science. So to try and synthesize all this valuation discussion, the collective analysis from looking at comparable multiples and thinking about the framework for a DCF analysis suggests that Givaudan is a company that the market values highly and for very rational reasons. Its premium multiples are a direct consequence of its superior and more predictable financial performance, its wide economic moat, and its consistent cash flow generation compared to its peers and the broader market. The quality is undeniable. The core debate for an investor, therefore, boils down to one of value versus quality. Is it a high-quality company? Yes. Is it cheap? No. The current valuation appears to fully price in the company's excellent prospects and track record, leaving very little margin of safety for potential disappointments in growth, margins, or unforeseen risks.
No room for error, essentially.
Pretty much. An investment at current levels is essentially a bet that the company can continue its near-flawless execution, that its industry-leading quality will continue to command such a significant premium in the market indefinitely, and that no major unforeseen risks like that antitrust probe materialize negatively. It's about buying into continued perfection or near perfection at a premium price.
So for you, the listener, it's a question of whether that premium is justified by continued flawless performance and strong growth, and whether you're comfortable with that level of pricing, acknowledging that there's less discount built in for potential future bumps in the road. It's a quality compounder, but you pay for that quality up front.
That's the fundamental trade-off here. Hashtag tag XSA, understanding the risks.
Every deep dive needs to look critically at the potential pitfalls. Even for a company as robust and high quality as Givaudan, what are the key risks it faces that could impact its performance or its valuation down the line? No business is risk-free.
Absolutely not. Despite its remarkable resilience and wide competitive moat, Givaudan faces several significant risks that investors should be acutely aware of. #A, business and operational risks. Perhaps the most significant ongoing operational risk is raw material price and availability volatility. Givaudan's gross margins are directly exposed to fluctuations in the prices of its vast array of natural and synthetic raw materials. Remember those 11,000 different inputs.
Right. Hard to hedge all of those.
Very difficult. While their pricing power helps to mitigate this over time, sharp, unexpected spikes in input costs could temporarily compress margins before they can pass those costs through. Furthermore, the availability of natural ingredients, which they are increasingly focused on for growth, can be disrupted by factors such as adverse weather conditions, droughts, floods, crop failures, plant diseases, or geopolitical issues in sourcing regions. Managing this immense and complex network is a constant operational challenge. Related to this is the broader risk of supply chain disruption. Their complex global supply chain, spanning over 100 countries, is inherently vulnerable to disruptions from geopolitical events, widespread pandemics as we saw, trade disputes, and logistics bottlenecks such as port closures or shipping delays.
Things outside their control?
Largely, yes. Any significant interruption could impact their ability to produce and deliver products in a timely manner, which could ripple through their customer base, potentially leading to lost sales or damage to crucial long-term relationships if they can't supply consistently. And finally, a risk inherent in their industry is operational safety and environmental incidents. Operating large-scale chemical production facilities carries inherent risks of accidents.
Like fires or spills.
Exactly. The tragic explosion at their Louisville, Kentucky facility in the U.S. in 2024, which sadly resulted in fatalities, is a stark and recent reminder of this risk. Such incidents can lead to immediate production halts, significant financial costs from repairs, remediation, and potential fines or litigation, and perhaps most importantly, severe reputational damage, which could take a long time to recover from and impact customer trust and employee morale.
These are serious operational considerations, especially given the global and chemical nature of their operations and supply chain. It highlights the constant vigilance required in this industry.
Constant vigilance and investment in safety are critical. #B, financial risks. On the purely financial side, Givaudan has significant exposure to currency risk, as we discussed.
The strong Swiss franc again.
Yes. As a Swiss domicile company earning the vast majority of its revenue in other currencies like the U.S. dollar and euro, a persistently strong Swiss franc creates that translational headwind. It consistently dampens their reported growth and profit figures in CHF terms, even if the underlying business is performing well in local currencies. It's a recurring drag that investors simply must factor in when assessing their reported results and future projections. There's also leverage and credit risk. While Givaudan's balance sheet is currently managed prudently, future large-scale M&A activity, though they say they focus on bolt-ons, could potentially increase its debt levels and financial leverage significantly.
Taking on too much debt for a big deal.
It's a possibility, though not their stated strategy currently. A significant increase in debt could constrain financial flexibility, make them more sensitive to rising interest rates, increasing interest expense, and potentially impact their ability to continue their progressive dividend policy or seize future growth opportunities without taking on excessive financial risk. So how they finance future growth matters.
So a strong Swiss franc isn't just an accounting quirk. It's a real potential drag on reported numbers. And any big debt-funded acquisitions could change their financial risk profile significantly. Worth watching.
Definitely worth watching their capital structure. #C, ESG and regulatory risks. ESG, environmental, social, governance, and regulatory risks are also increasingly important and can have significant financial and reputational impacts. Regulatory scrutiny of ingredients is a major and growing risk, especially in the European Union, which often sets global standards for chemical safety.
More chemicals getting banned or restricted.
That's the trend. Regulatory bodies are increasing their scrutiny of chemical substances used in consumer products, looking at potential long-term health or environmental effects. The potential for ingredients to be banned or restricted could force Givaudan to undertake costly R&D and reformulation efforts, or even to remove certain important ingredients from its palette entirely, impacting product offerings and potentially limiting innovation if certain key molecules become unusable. It adds cost and complexity. A more immediate and critical risk, however, is that ongoing industry-wide antitrust investigation by European and Swiss authorities.
The cartel probe.
Exactly. This investigation, which Givaudan has confirmed it is a target of, is examining possible price fixing in fragrances and ingredients across the industry. An adverse finding could result in truly substantial fines, potentially hundreds of millions or even billions across the industry, significant litigation costs defending themselves, and severe damage to the company's reputation and customer relationships, regardless of the outcome. The uncertainty surrounding this probe remains a major overhang on the stock and is arguably the single largest company-specific idiosyncratic risk that Givaudan faces right now.
A really big unknown.
A very big unknown. Finally, looking longer term, there's the climate change impact on sourcing. For a company increasingly focused on natural ingredients derived from agriculture, climate change poses a significant long-term risk. Changing weather patterns, increased frequency of extreme weather events like droughts and floods, and biodiversity loss could threaten the long-term supply and increase the price volatility of key botanical raw materials, which are a cornerstone of the company's growth strategy for natural products.
So climate change could disrupt their natural ingredients supply.
It's a clear long-term risk, they acknowledge. It necessitates developing resilient sourcing strategies, investing in agricultural research, and potentially exploring biotech alternatives, all of which Givaudan is pursuing, but which remains an evolving and significant challenge for the entire industry.
These are some of the less visible but potentially most impactful risks, especially the regulatory scrutiny and that huge antitrust cloud hanging over them. They could fundamentally alter the industry landscape or Givaudan's position within it. You really need to be aware of these when assessing Givaudan's long-term outlook.
Absolutely critical risks to monitor.
Okay, let's try to bring it all together now. Based on everything we've unpacked, the strength, the strategy, the financials, the risks, what's the overall synthesis of Givaudan's formidable merits and the concerns that you, our listener, should consider? And what are the really critical factors that will likely drive its future performance?
All right, synthesizing it. Givaudan is truly a best-in-class global leader operating in a structurally attractive oligopolistic industry. That's the starting point. Its formidable competitive moat is built on decades of investment in R&D, a deeply integrated co-creation model with its customers that creates high switching costs and a masterful command of incredibly complex global supply chains and regulatory environments. This translates directly into a superior financial profile characterized by resilient, often above-market growth, demonstrable pricing power allowing margin protection, and the consistent generation of strong free cash flow. Add to that a disciplined capital allocation strategy, which prioritizes organic reinvestment first and then fuels a remarkably consistent progressive dividend, and you have a recipe that has delivered compounding returns to shareholders for over two decades. The quality case is very strong. But these outstanding qualities are fully recognized, perhaps even celebrated, by the market. This results in a perennially high valuation, as we discussed, often leaving very little margin of safety for new investors. Tangible risks remain, including the persistent strength of the Swiss franc acting as a drag on reported results, and the inherent volatility of raw material costs, even if they manage it well. Furthermore, two significant unresolved issues present material risks right now. The increasing stringency of chemical regulations globally, which could add costs and complexity, and, perhaps most importantly, the major overhang of uncertainty from the ongoing industry-wide antitrust investigation, which could potentially lead to substantial penalties and reputational harm.
So it's a classic high-quality business story, a real compounder, but its price certainly reflects that quality, leaving little room for error or unforeseen challenges. It's a testament to its operational excellence, but also a call for careful consideration regarding the entry point and the risks involved.
Yes, exactly. The quality is high, but so is the price and the associated expectations. #B. Critical factors driving future performance. So for anyone monitoring Givaudan going forward, future performance and ultimately the investment case will likely hinge on several critical factors, things you should watch closely. First, their ability to maintain that delicate volume price dynamic. Can they continue driving healthy volume growth across their diverse segments while simultaneously preserving the pricing discipline necessary to protect those industry-leading margins? Getting that balance right is crucial for continued profitability growth. Second, the success and, crucially, the profitability of their strategic initiatives in higher growth adjacencies. How well do active beauty, health and well-being solutions, and their expanded natural ingredients portfolio perform? These need to deliver not just revenue growth, but also strong margins to justify the investment and contribute meaningfully to the bottom line. Are they truly becoming significant growth engines beyond the core F&F? Third, their continued market share gains with faster-growing local and regional brands, particularly in emerging markets. This has been a proven key growth lever for them, offsetting slower growth from some global giants. Can they keep winning with these dynamic players? And finally, perhaps most critically in the near and medium term, the resolution of the antitrust probe. The outcome of this investigation, whether it results in large fines, manageable settlements, or exoneration, is the most significant company-specific risk. A favorable or manageable outcome would remove a major uncertainty that currently weighs on the stock and investor sentiment. A harsh outcome could be very damaging.
These are the key dials you, our listener, should watch if you want to understand Givaudan's journey moving forward. The interplay of volume and price, the success of new ventures, winning with local players, and clearing that antitrust hurdle, these will likely shape Givaudan's story and its value in the coming years.
Those are certainly the key areas I would focus on. #outro. So wrapping up, an investment in Givaudan, given its characteristics and valuation, is most appropriately viewed through a long-term lens. It's arguably suitable for an investor with a time horizon of 5 years or more who prioritizes quality, predictability, and compounding growth over seeking deep value in potentially turnaround or undervalued assets. It's a buy-and-hold quality type of name if you're comfortable with the entry price. Success for a long-term investment here would likely be defined by their continued execution against their long-term financial targets. Historically, that's been around 4 or 5% average LFL sales growth, though they're exceeding that now and maintaining that free cash flow to sales ratio of over 12%. It would also require the maintenance of their industry-leading EBITDA margins and, of course, the continuation of their progressive dividend policy, which is a key part of the return story. Ultimately, CESS manifests as long-term share price appreciation broadly in line with the underlying growth in earnings and cash flow per share, reaffirming its status as a premier compounder in the global market.
You're betting on continued, steady, high-quality execution compounding over time.
So this deep dive really shows us how a company can achieve and sustain market dominance through a potent blend of relentless innovation, deep strategic partnerships, and almost unparalleled expertise in its industry, even in a market that, while seemingly niche, touches our lives in countless, often unnoticed ways every single day. We've explored Givaudan's mastery of the physical and chemical world of flavors and fragrances, but here's a final provocative thought for you to consider. As consumer preferences shift ever more rapidly, influenced by digital trends, AI, and increasing demands for personalization and transparency, what might be the next truly disruptive frontier for this industry? We talked about naturals and AI in creation, but what's beyond that? Could it be highly personalized, perhaps even on-demand, scent and flavor creation at the individual consumer level, maybe driven by sophisticated diagnostics or even at-home biosynthesis or 3D printing of flavor fragrance molecules? Or could it be entirely new sensory experiences, perhaps driven by neurotechnology that bypasses traditional senses altogether to create perceptions of taste and smell? What does you think the far future holds for altering our sensory world?